The following is a presentation of the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
To the Wind Tunnel Show. This is myself, Handsome Dan Lopez, your gracious host, and this is Handsome Dan's Final Say. I am the author of Handsome Dan's Last Word, which you can find at handsomedanslastword.blogspot.com, and I do apologize for the excessive background noise, but I'm going to do my best to be louder than the noise, and hopefully that won't be too big of a distraction. Honestly, I was really hoping not to do this on the car ride to work again. However, I've been waiting for a friend of mine to join me for an episode of Handsome Dan's Final Say. And he's dragging ass, so I'm tired of waiting. So I've got some stuff that I want to just kind of ramble on. And so rather than wait any longer, I'm going to do this here show for you today. As always, Handsome Dan's Final Say is brought to you proudly on the Shining Wizards Network, www.shiningwizardsnetwork.com, where you can find all of the awesome shows that partner together to bring you the very best in pro wrestling opinions and entertainment. So check those guys out. Check out all the shows on there. This show would not even exist if it wasn't for them. So by all means, go there and be entertained, be informed, stay on top of the wrestling industry, the Shining Wizards, the godfathers, grandfathers, illegitimate fathers of the network. Interviewed AJ Styles. I mean, how more current can you get? How more relevant can you get than that? The guy that just left TNA, the hottest commodity on the independent circuit right now, and they got him with a very in-depth interview. You can find out a lot of his opinions on the situation there in TNA and his departure. So go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com and get everything you need to know about the wrestling business. Okay, now, last time I did this, it was kind of a inaugural thing. It was kind of an experiment, and it was basically just a way of staying awake on the road. It was New Year's Eve, a long trip home. I was driving, it was taking about a 3-hour car ride, and to avoid falling asleep at the wheel and pulling a JYD, I decided to just ramble and talk and share my opinions about some wrestling topics, and it got the job done. It kept me awake, but apparently it also was insightful and entertaining to the people who had the misfortune of listening to it. So I figured, well, if they enjoyed the first one, the second one can only be better, right? Well, at least that's what we hope. So here's round two, for better or worse. Not as long of a commute today, so I'm going to keep it brief, but I want to touch on a few current topics. Basically, what I'd like to be, if possible, I mean, I've already firmly established myself as the smartest man not in pro wrestling, but what I'd like to also be is the advocate against the internet wrestling community, because personally I'm not a fan of the internet wrestling community, because 9 times out of 10 they miss the mark. If they were a dude and the mark was a vagina, then they would generate an orgasm maybe 10% of the time. That's how often these guys miss the mark. And so I want to be that voice, because I want people to realize that not everyone who talks about wrestling on a podcast, or not everyone who discusses wrestling on a social on social media or on a wrestling forum or through a blog, is clueless about wrestling. So I want people to realize that, you know, some of us, and I'm not going to say that we know our stuff. I'm not going to say that I know my stuff, because there's a lot I don't know. But some of us are not just embracing the popular opinion. Some of us are free thinkers who like to investigate other opinions, other conclusions, and think for ourselves. That's the kind of person that I like to believe that I am. I try not to get caught up in the hoopla or in the what typically is the knee-jerk response, or the popular response that usually follows a significant event in wrestling or the aftermath of a wrestling show. Usually right away you can fire up your old laptop, you can fire up your smartphone or whatever, start scrolling through the wrestling chatter, and it's usually mostly the same opinion. And the differing opinion is usually the same too. So you've got this big group on one side with the opinion that everything sucks. And then you have this group on the other side with the opinion that everything's awesome. And those are the two majorities. It's kind of like politics. You've got the jackasses on one side, and you've got the fat asses, the elephants, on the other side. And I don't know how you connect the two, like which side is the Democrats and which side is the Republicans. I don't really care. The point is, you've got these two major opinions on both sides of the fence. And I think that both of them are equally wrong the majority of the time. I think the truth is found somewhere in the middle. And not unlike the analogy of dudes attacking vaginas in the hopes of achieving orgasm for the female, I like to find myself right in the middle. Because 9 times out of 10, that's where you're going to hit the mark and achieve the desired results. So, that being said, my opinion is sometimes going to sway a little bit to one side, sometimes it's going to sway a little bit to the other side, but most of the time, it's not going to fall directly in line with what everybody else says or what everybody else thinks. Case in point, Brock Lesnar. That was my horrible Paul Heyman impersonation. Although, as bad as it was, it was a million times better than Big Show's Marge Simpson version of Paul Heyman. People are not crazy about the way Brock Lesnar has been used, and I'll agree with that. I'm not crazy about it either. However, in this particular matchup, one of the questions that has been raised is, what good does it do to see a Brock Lesnar Big Show confrontation at the Royal Rumble or at WrestleMania or wherever? And you got to look at it from a booking perspective and not from a fan perspective. And so looking at it from a booking perspective, usually when you've got an angle and you've got a well-defined angle, two very clear participants are facing each other for the purpose of putting one over the other. That's the way you got to look at it. You've got Brock Lesnar, you've got Big Show. Big Show's been tending to get the best of Brock Lesnar so far. He's got him backpedaling. He's been throwing him all around the ring. And hats off to Brock Lesnar. He is bumping his ass off. And who would have thought that a guy with that kind of size at his age, he's not old necessarily, but he's not young either. He's not the freak of nature that he was when he first debuted. You know, he's... You got to say he's slowed down a step or two. His reflexes aren't quite as good as they used to be. But still, for that being the case, the guy is flying all over the ring. And that, to me, says that, number one, he's excited about this angle. And that, to me, says that he's going over in this angle. And then that, to me, says that they've got plans for Brock Lesnar. They are trying to make him look strong. And who better to do that against than someone who is always booked strong in the Big Show? Now, granted, I don't put much stock in Big Show. I don't necessarily like him or like what he's done over the course of his career. But in general, generally speaking, from an observer's perspective, he's one of the few guys who in the last couple of years has been consistently booked as a powerhouse, who's been consistently booked as the great equalizer. Just look at the Daniel Bryan fiasco that was his championship title chase. Not just his, but Goldust and Cody Rhodes, too. They owe their championship success to the Big Show. I mean, I don't know why the WWE feels it's necessary to devalue the baby faces in their company, the ones that the fans really want. But for whatever reason, I guess they felt like Goldust and Cody Rhodes going over the Shield wasn't believable, and Daniel Bryan overcoming whoever it was, the Authority or whatever the fuck, wasn't believable. So Big Show had to help Daniel Bryan out. Big Show had to help Goldust and Cody Rhodes out. So with regard to the baby faces in the company, you know, next to John Cena, Big Show is the one consistent force over the past few years. He is the unbeatable guy. And whether they were planning this from the beginning, like 2 years ago, they said, okay, Brock, when the time is right, we're going to put you over Big Show. And in the meantime, we're going to keep Big Show looking strong so that when it is time for you to go over him, it's going to mean something. If that's the case, then my hat's off to WWE and the booking committee. I don't think that they plan ahead that far in advance. I mean, realistically, how could you? With so much TV week to week and never knowing how ready anybody's going to be or the reactions of the crowd to things, I have a hard time believing that that was planned well in advance. But as luck would have it, Big Show has been booked strong. Brock Lesnar needs to go over somebody if they plan on making him mean anything when it's time to do something important with him. And that's my guess, is that they're setting up for some kind of push for Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar seems equally fired up about it. Like, he did the whole Triple H thing, but it just didn't have any kind of special feel to it, in my opinion. Not only because the match sucked balls, or matches, I don't remember even how many they had, but I'm pretty sure they all sucked. The one I saw at WrestleMania sucked. But But he genuinely seems really fired up right now, Brock Lesnar does. You know, with the Call of the Wild, the National Geographic caliber shrieks that he was letting out when he did the F5 to Mark Henry. I mean, he's really getting into this angle with Big Show and this push that he's getting, and he's playing the part of the heel extremely well. And so people who are being critical of this particular angle, I understand why, but just from an observer's perspective, I feel like it's being executed extremely well. Not only by Brock Lesnar, because he doesn't really have to do a whole lot to be a heel, because he's naturally a dick by nature from everything I've seen about him. But Big Show, too. You got to take your hat off to him, because he's not being a cool babyface. He's being kind of an annoying babyface, the kind that you want to see get beat. And that's critical, because if he was too likable, then it would be counterproductive for Brock to go over him. But if he's just likable enough to where you understand that he's the babyface and he's kind of the guy that the casual fan is going to root for, then it doesn't really hurt Brock when he goes over him. It becomes impressive. And it doesn't feel like something that's forced. And so I think that particular angle is being is playing out well. I don't necessarily look forward to the match, but I feel like it's gonna have a few of those holy shit moments. It's gonna have a few of those feats of strength on behalf of both guys, because I don't think that Show is gonna get completely buried, because I mean, I know it's happened before, especially early in his WWF career, but I don't feel like he's at that point. I think the WWF still views him as a valuable commodity, a valuable prop to use to put people over, and so I don't think they're going to completely bury him. He's definitely got more gas left in the tank, but you're going to see a definitive win by Brock Lesnar in this angle, I believe, and some holy shit moments as far as feats of strength are concerned. So, I'm not necessarily looking forward to the match, but it could be a decent spectacle as spectacles go. I'm not saying it's going to be a five-star classic or anything, don't get me wrong. I'm not expecting a shooting star press or anything like that, but I wouldn't be surprised to see another superplex that breaks the ring, or at least that attempts to break the ring. Some holy shit moments on the floor. An F5 by Brock for sure. So you're definitely going to see some shit between these two. And the ultimate end of it all is Brock Lesnar looking strong and in victory and being poised for probably a championship title shot, if not an outright championship title reign. So, and just as a quick aside, hats off to Paul Heyman for being the best heel in wrestling right now. Paul Heyman, as many people out there that love ECW, and as many people out there that love Paul Heyman, the guy could be over anytime he wants to be. He could be cheered anytime he wants to be. But he doesn't want to be cheered. He wants to be booed. He wants to be hated. And he's doing a damn fine job of being hated. And that, to me, is skill. And so hats off to Paul Heyman, because right now, in my opinion, he's the greatest heel in wrestling. Because he knows how to be a heel. He knows how to play the role of a heel. You know, Brock Lesnar is doing a good job, too. But I don't feel like it's all that much acting on his part. It's all that much skill on his part. First of all, he hardly has to say anything. But second of all, he's just a dick by nature. So, you know, just being yourself, that's not a talent. But because Paul Heyman is his voice and his vehicle, it's a great fit. And it creates a situation where Brock doesn't have to do a whole lot to be hated. If he came out by himself, didn't speak, and just destroyed people, he would probably get cheered. But because he's with the Weasley Paul Heyman, and Heyman can, you know, talk sufficiently to put over the heel persona, and then the fact that Brock needs this mouthpiece, it all the elements are there of that old school heel dynamic that I just fucking love. And that to me is wrestling, and that's why I'm not hating Brock Lesnar or the way he's being used in this particular angle. I'm applauding this particular angle. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how that pans out. I do believe Lesnar's going over, and I'm interested to see what the next step is. I can only imagine it's a title shot, and that is interesting to me. I'm curious to see if Lesnar gets a cheap one-month reign, if he wins the title at all. Will they give him a lengthy, like, reign of terror sort of thing? And who's going to challenge him? I mean, there's some definite possibilities there and some things to, you know, kind of get excited about, because there's a lot of people on the current roster that Brock Lesnar has not faced. And, yeah, we've all been kind of waiting around and biding our time and wondering, you know, when's he going to take on you know, Daniel Bryan and some of the new guys. Maybe that time is just around the corner. So, you know, we all like to say that the WWE and Vince McMahon don't know what they're doing, but maybe in the case of Brock Lesnar, they do, because they've been, you know, slowly bringing him along, trying to make money with him, make him a little bit of a draw. They could have, you know, went full steam ahead right from the get-go, but they've paced themselves. And there's so many factors that are involved in that it's easy for us to sit back and be critical, but you got to consider, I mean, the guy, I don't think he wants to go back to wrestling a full schedule. And so using him in this spot duty for these couple of years, it's, you know, I don't know behind the scenes, but it seems to have kept him happy. It's kept him somewhat relevant. I mean, when he comes out, it's not like the crowd doesn't pop. It's not like the crowd doesn't go, oh shit, something's about to happen. And, you know, our usual complaint is that people are overused. And so hats off to WWE for not overexposing Brock Lesnar. Sure, there's some matches that he lost that he probably should have won. But who knows if those situations won't ultimately be rectified. You know, the John Cena loss, for example. It wasn't like it was a clean win for John Cena. From everything that I've heard about the match, I haven't seen it, but basically Brock kicked his ass, and then John Cena got lucky and caught him with a punch, I guess with a chain wrapped around his fist or something like that, and was able to pin him. So it wasn't like it was a decisive win for John Cena or anything like that, and that's good fodder for when those two have to meet again, because you can bet the WWE is going to use that as part of the angle. So, again, it hasn't been perfect booking, but then again, it hasn't been as terrible as what I feel like so many of you, the IWC, have claimed or have tried to lead others to believe. Okay, so that's my take on that. I want to talk about a match that occurred recently, not this past Monday on Raw, but the week before. It was a match between Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston. And this match has gotten a lot of attention for a couple of reasons, and I feel like for the wrong reasons. Here's the reason why that match got attention on the IWC, amongst the IWC. These are kind of the comments that you read or heard or saw. Orton attacking Cena's father again. Kofi Kingston beats the world champ. A jobber beating the world champ. Your world champ loses to a jobber. Let's see, what else? What a sloppy finish. Stuff like that. Okay. Well, let me address those one at a time. First of all, I don't remember the last time Orton attacked Cena's father, okay? And I doubt that most of that crowd remembered either. It's usually the smart marks, the people who follow wrestling on a consistent basis and watch everything, that remember that. At least that's what I think. Granted, Orton and Cena, I'm not excited about it, okay? I'm not going to make any pretenses about that. But when Orton attacked Cena's father, it felt right to me at the time based on the way the match had played out. That's all I'm saying. When it happened, I didn't think, wait, again? Because I didn't remember the last time he attacked Cena's father. I don't remember what happened 2 weeks ago on Raw. At least I don't think I do. I don't remember very many details if I do. But, you know, the way that this stuff is fired at us like a machine gun, how can you remember anything? Like, yeah, I'm sure it happened, and I'm sure it was significant at the time, and I'm sure that a lot of people probably do remember that, but I didn't. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one. I'm sure lots of other people in that crowd or watching on TV didn't remember it either. So it didn't leave a bad taste in my mouth, and it didn't take me aback, and I wasn't like, wait, again? It didn't bother me. I'm not saying that that was good or bad. I'm just saying it didn't bother me. Okay. The sloppy finish. I agree. It was a sloppy finish, and that's Kofi Kingston for you. He fucking sucks. Kofi Kingston fucking sucks, and let's stop talking about a Kofi Kingston push because he sucks. He fucking sucks. He's a shitty wrestler. All he knows how to do is fucking jump high, do that girly-ass, high-stepping march around the ring that makes him look like a total fucking fag. Makes him look like a fucking extra dancer at a Justin Bieber concert. Fuck Kofi Kingston. He's a shitty-ass wrestler. The only thing he's good for is being a token black person on the roster. Or getting his ass kicked by a badass heel. I hate Kofi Kingston. I want him gone from the WWE. He sucks. He's terrible. You would think that someone who is part of the regular roster and wrestles all the fucking time could learn how to do his fucking move. And he doesn't even know how to do his own fucking moves half the time. He botches them constantly. How do you not, just muscle memory alone, how do you not know how to do your own fucking moves when all you've been doing the whole match is getting your ass kicked? You haven't been flying all over the ring. You're not... It's not like you had to memorize a whole script of what you had to do out there. All you had to do was lay around and get your ass kicked, and you still botched the fucking finish? Fuck Kofi Kingston. He's a terrible wrestler. He sucks. He doesn't belong in the fucking ring. That's my opinion of Kofi Kingston, and I completely agree. He almost totally killed that match with the shitty-ass finish. Kofi Kingston is fucking terrible. That's not to say he couldn't get better with a repackage, maybe. Because these moves that he's doing, yeah, some of them are kind of impressive, but some of them are fucking awful. Just fucking awful. Like where he jumps onto the ropes and puts his crotch in dudes' faces? What the fuck? And I'm supposed to cheer for you as a fucking baby face? Get the fuck out of here. Why would you run at someone dick first in a fight? Why the fuck would you do that? You look fucking ridiculous, and then when you dance around the ring and do your stupid boom boom drop, like, I know everybody needs one of those moves, apparently, as if MVPs wasn't bad enough. Everybody needs one of those moves these days, but that's just fucking ridiculous. And then he's all fired up. What are you so fucking fired up about, you fucking loser? You've been doing nothing but losing for the past 2 years or year and a half or whatever the fuck it's been. What are you so excited about? Put a fucking serious face on and make me believe you that you really give a shit about what you're doing and you're not just playing a character out there. And maybe the top brass will fucking do something with you. It's fucking ridiculous. Oh, I hate Kofi Kingston. He's fucking awful. And so, I don't know who else they could have gotten to put in that role. I mean, I would have rather anybody else. But Kofi Kingston is a colorful character, if nothing else. And he, doggone it, he's a nice young man. And so I guess if there was one person that the WWE was confident that the fans would pop for to see win that match, that the fans would get sympathetic for, would, I guess it would be Kofi Kingston. I mean, I guess he's, I don't want to necessarily say he's good at selling, but he did a decent job of generating some sympathy. So, if nothing else, he did that part right. But that's all the credit I'm giving fucking Botchy Bingston. And that was the best I could come up with on that. So, apparently I'm not much better at being entertaining. But nevertheless, you understand my point. I hate Kofi Kingston. Hopefully I've established that and made that abundantly clear. But, okay, so the sloppy finish, I will completely concede that point. However, Randy Orton losing to a jobber. If Kofi Kingston came out and bumped Randy Orton all over the ring and then beat him soundly and convincingly, you would have a point. But that's not what happened. Get your fucking head out of your ass. Get your fucking, take a step back from the fucking computer for a minute. Take a step back from the fucking social media. Take a step back from the forums and all that stuff. And think of it as and actually live up to your name of a smart mark. Don't be a stupid mark. Be a smart mark. If that's what you claim to be, if that's what you try to put yourself over as, he didn't lose to the jobber. Randy Orton beat himself. He was kicking Kofi Kingston's ass. He was obviously not all there, because if he'd gone for the RKO, he would have won the match. But he was taking out some frustration. That's the fucking storyline. It's like when something happens that a smart mark doesn't like, it's like they forget all about the philosophy or the psychology of wrestling. And all it becomes is hating on the bad, on what they consider to be the bad booking decision. Like, yes, I know none of us like Orton versus Cena again. I don't like it either. But that's the storyline. So if you're going to sell the storyline, it makes sense that Randy Orton would be beating out the frustration on Kofi Kingston. That sounded gay. He would be taking out his frustration by beating the shit out of Kofi Kingston. That's better. okay, while we try to regroup here from the from that gay moment in wrestling history, the ambiguously gay moment that we just had. But that makes sense. According to the psychology of wrestling, according to the angle that they're booking. So stop fucking acting like this just came out of the blue, because it didn't. Stop pretending to be ignorant. Too many times, smart marks play the ignorance card when it comes to a decision that's made that they don't approve of. Yes, under normal circumstances, it would be wrong for Randy Orton to lose to Kofi Kingston. But that's not the point they were trying to convey. The point they were trying to convey is Randy Orton is not in the right frame of mind. Otherwise, he's beaten Kofi Kingston how many times before? Plenty of times. So, in normal circumstances, he would have gone for the RKO and the match would have been over. But he didn't do it because he was prolonging Kofi Kingston's agony. Now, let me dwell on that for a few minutes. What a masterful, masterful, masterful job Randy Orton did at communicating that. That was the greatest example of wrestling psychology in a match that I have seen in a long time. Very rarely anymore do you get that type of match on TV or anywhere where the heel is just being deliberate and methodical and almost to the point of being boring with his offense. And the babyface, no matter how good he is or no matter how hard he tries, he just can't seem to break the heel's momentum. And it frustrates the fans because they want to see high flying. They want to see action. They know what the babyface is capable of. Everyone knows Kofi Kingston's capable of all of these high flying, exciting moves. But they're being robbed of that because this dastardly heel is grounding this high flying babyface. And they know that if Kofi Kingston could just break away and unleash some of that furious offense, then Randy Orton would really be in trouble then. It's just so fucking good. I'm like, you guys can't see my face, but I've got a grin from ear to ear because that, to me, is wrestling. That's so fucking good. And if you're not aware of that, if you're not in tune with that, you wouldn't even realize it was going on. You and all your smart mark pride would say, oh, this is such a boring match. Let's, you know, Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston again. Let's get this shit over with and blah, blah, blah. I'm totally missing the boat, people. You can't see, you're not seeing the forest for the trees. If you're not paying attention, you're going to say to yourself, oh, this is just another fucking tree. I see trees all up and down the highway on my way to work. But if you take a step back and you notice that you're standing in the middle of something really majestic and something really, you know, a beautiful example of nature, then all of a sudden they don't become just trees. You know, you understand what I mean. You're not taking the parts of the forest, the individual parts. You have to take it as a whole. So don't look at it as it's Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton. Randy Orton is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Don't take it from that viewpoint. Don't look at the parts. Look at the whole. Look at what they created in that segment. They created a beautiful work of art that is a credit to professional wrestling. Now people, that statement may be absolutely ludicrous to some people. They may hear that statement and go, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He's completely fucking lost his mind. But no, I have not. And anybody who knows wrestling, and I'll step out on a limb, I'll fucking say it. Anybody who knows wrestling will agree with me that that match was a fucking work of art when it, as far as the psychology of professional wrestling is concerned. Because it did everything that it set out to do, and the wrestlers did not allow the lack of enthusiasm from the crowd deter them, because they knew they were accomplishing the goal by achieving that response. It's all part of the ride. You gotta take them through the ride from start to finish, or else you don't get the full effect. And so many wrestlers, from what I've seen, don't even know that there is a ride. That's the way it appears to me. And I'm sure they know, but damn it, it sure seems like they're fucking clueless on how to take the fans on that ride. That's the way it appears to me. Like, they're so focused on executing the move that they don't even know when to do it or why they're doing it or how to even communicate that. And it's frustrating to me. And I posted something on the Ring Wars page along these very same lines, which is facebook.com/ringwars. Check it out. It would be under the subtitle of Handsome Dan's Last Word. Those posts tend to get buried because they put shit up pretty regularly, but if you just scroll through the timeline, you'll eventually come across it. It's got a picture. That's all, folks. A picture of Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston. So if you find that picture, you found the article. But I I posted it up there because it was a response to originally The Midnight Jury, which is one of the shows on the Shining Wizards Network. We had a discussion, you know, that got a little heated, but we cooler heads prevailed and we understood that we were just wrestling fans debating an issue. So no harm, no foul. But originally it was a response to them. I watched an episode of TNA Impact, and they've been advocates for Impact, trying to encourage people to check it out, saying that it was, for the most part, an enjoyable wrestling program. And I hadn't watched in a few weeks, so I wanted to give it another try, and so I did, and I wasn't impressed. And I basically dared them to defend it, making my points and then giving them the opportunity to make their points. And along the way, the question was raised, what kind of wrestling do I enjoy? Because it seemed like I didn't enjoy anything. And, you know, that's the way a lot of the smart marks or members of the IWC will come across sometimes. You know, like they don't enjoy anything. And I was starting to develop that, I guess, come across that way. Like, well, fuck, if you don't enjoy this, then what the hell do you enjoy, you know? You don't seem to like anything. So I decided to tell them what I liked. And I feel like I made it clear, but I mean, it's a discussion that you could have for a long time, spend hours talking about, and still the other person might fail to understand what you're talking about. Because the subtlety of great wrestling is so minute in its detail that even a wrestling fan, a fervent wrestling fan, a dedicated wrestling fan, could fail to see it, could fail to pick up on it. And that's why it's so hard to communicate to people. And some people hear you talk this way, or they read your stuff, and they're like, you're just taking this shit way too seriously. You are overanalyzing. That's the comment that I've gotten before, is that I'm overanalyzing. And I'm not. Because if you understood what I understand, what a lot of people understand, if you understood it, then you would get it too. And less than what you consider to be great wrestling would cease to impress you. That's the point. That's why I'm so passionate about this, and that's why I don't back down from this particular topic. When it comes to discussing great wrestling, I am going to establish my point, and I'm not going to just concede defeat because my opinion of good wrestling and yours doesn't match up.
SWN.ShiningWizards.com. That's right, SWN.ShiningWizards.com. We have the Fallen Angels, the Midnight Jury, the Neckbreaker Podcast, 2.5 Wrestlers, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Pro Wrestling 101 with Justin Credible, and the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. For your one-stop shopping for all things sports entertainment broadcasting, head on over to swn.shiningwizards.com. Tell them Phil sent you, and you'll get absolutely nothing. That's the Shining Wizards Wrestling Network. Entertainment here.
All right, so it is later that same day. You guys probably didn't even realize I was gone, but I was, and now instead of traveling to work, I am traveling home from work. Just put in an 8.5-hour day at the old JOB. Now it's time to head on back to the his house. And I'm not sure if this is rock bottom, but I'm pretty sure I can see it from here. I just paid the guy at my local Circle K I just paid for a gallon, 1 gallon of gasoline for my vehicle, and a bag of chips. So it was a grand total of $4.36, which I just happened to have on me. Exact change. I didn't even plan it that way. But that's exactly how it worked out. And it took literally every piece of money I had. So, but nevertheless, that's what you do when you're a broke-ass nigger like I am. So now we're driving home, and we're going to finish up with this show for tonight. As I intermittently stuff my face with Cheetos, and I hope you don't hold that against me. But your boy is hungry from putting in a full day's worth of work. So basically, we were talking about a few current things, and I just wanted to get those things off my chest, out of the way. Hopefully you understand where I'm coming from with the whole Brock Lesnar thing. Hopefully you understand and you see my point with regard to the whole Randy Orton match. And that's actually a good segue into the actual meat of the episode today, which is what I wanted to get into, which is the current state of professional wrestling and why I feel like wrestling is not what it used to be. And excuse me a moment as I chow down a little bit. Delicious. But the current state of professional wrestling leaves a lot to be desired, in my opinion. You see a lot of the same shit over and over again. And understandably so. I mean, I don't hold it against the wrestlers, because what are they supposed to do? I mean, they're on TV every fucking week. Twice, three times a week sometimes. So, I mean, you can't really blame them. And, I'm sorry, that's got to be really fucking annoying. delicious. Okay. So, but that's in WWE. Okay, those guys have an excuse. You're on TV that much, you're not going to break out new shit every single time. And the way the shows are paced, it's hard to have the kind of match that Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston had every single time. And not that you should, I'm not advocating that. But there used to be a greater psychology in wrestling once upon a time. And a lot of it had to do with nothing more or nothing less than the moves that the guys did. I mean, think about it. Wrestling, when I fell in love with wrestling, it was around 1984, 1985, around the time of, the birth of Hulkamania, around the time of the Goonies. And if you were a wrestling fan at the time that I was, you understand the connection between the Goonies and professional wrestling. Around the time of Cyndi Lauper, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, all that stuff, okay? And during that time, I mean, you certainly had your share of wacky stuff going on, especially in the WWF, you know. At that time, a lot of purists, for lack of a better term, referred to the WWF as a circus, that it perverted professional wrestling and turned it into a circus. And in a lot of ways, it did. You know, Vince McMahon would often take people who were legit badasses in other territories, and when he brought them in, they became clowns, caricatures, you know? People that you couldn't really take seriously anymore because of these ridiculous gimmicks that he gave them, or ridiculous over-the-top storylines that he put them in. But I'm not necessarily talking about that, because you know, it was enjoyable, and you got that shit, that kind of shit going on almost in every territory, whether they like to admit it or not. I'm sure there were plenty that didn't do that, but there was lots of them that did. Colorful characters, colorful storylines. So that doesn't really bother me. What bothers me is the in-ring product and the way that has degenerated over the years. That's what bothers me. Because back in the day, and I don't like using that term, but what else can you say? I mean, literally, that's what we're referring to, back in the day. You had mostly, you take a look at a wrestling match from the 80s, and I'm talking about the mid-80s, not the late 80s, the mid-80s, okay? You will see mostly kicking and punching. You won't see a whole lot of moves. And it's just funny to me how somewhere along the line, good wrestling, and I'm not using air quotes because I'm driving and I don't want to kill myself, but if I wasn't driving, I would be using air quotes right now. Good wrestling, somehow the definition of good wrestling became how many moves can you squeeze into one match. That became the definition of good wrestling. And I don't give a fuck if this is annoying. I'm going to stuff my face with some Cheetos right now. This episode is brought to you by Cheetos, the cheese that goes crunch. That's old school. Okay. As I was saying, what the fuck was I saying? That seems to be the definition of good wrestling today. How many moves can you squeeze into one match? Why? When did that become the definition of good wrestling? I'll tell you when it did. I will exactly tell you when it did. When ECW became popular. That was when. Because if you think about it, prior to ECW, even just prior to ECW, you look at wrestling in the mainstream, and every once in a while you had your Dynamite Kids and your Owen Harts and your Brian Pillmans, guys that would do very innovative stuff, and your Scott Steiners, but even those guys knew how to pace themselves. Even those guys knew when to take it down a notch. But they were the innovators. And the stuff that they did would look tame compared to the shit people are pulling off these days. But nevertheless, those guys weren't the norm. They were the exception. Most matches, most wrestling matches, was kicking and punching and rest holds. Wear down holds, to use another term. I guess that's more of a kayfabe term. But that's what it was. You didn't have this bell-to-bell action like you do these days. This constant motion that seems to be motion for motion's sake. It's like, don't you dare execute a rest hold because you'll bore the fans. But I'll tell you what, when Kofi Kingston pinned Randy Orton, those fans were anything but bored. They popped for a fucking jobber pinning the world champion, when we all know the world championship means nothing, means dick. Being a jobber means less than dick, and yet the crowd popped for that. Why? Because in that one instance, Randy Orton took him to school. He took them on a ride, and they were along for the ride. And he didn't let anything deter him from accomplishing the goal, from taking them from point A to point B. He could have easily broke from the plan and decided to call an audible and just start kicking it up into high gear for both of them. But he didn't. He stayed the course, and it paid off. It paid off for me. I don't know whether it paid off for anybody else, but I think the reason why it didn't pay off for anybody else is because they weren't paying attention, and they don't recognize good wrestling when they see it. I do. That was good wrestling. But today, that's not considered good wrestling. Good wrestling is Ring of Honor, or Chikara, or Dragon Gate, or Evolve, or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. All these groups. And it's like, let's see how many moves we can do in one match. Really wow the crowd. But the truth is, these guys are doing this shit, half fucking killing themselves, and nobody gives a fuck. Maybe those fans do, but when you're pulling that shit in a high school gymnasium and there's maybe 60 people there, does anybody really care? Are you really doing anything special? I say no. I say make them care about you first, and then they'll care about your moves. But right now, you're just a nameless, faceless person out there. No identity. No reason for these people to get behind you at all. But find a way to connect with them. And then they might start giving a shit about these moves that you're doing. And a big way to do that is to dial it down a notch. Sell a fucking move. They're doing these amazing, incredible athletic things, but they're not even selling it half the time. Why should I care that you just gave someone a brain buster when it looks like it didn't even phase the guy? He popped right back up. What makes the brain buster special if you're not gonna fucking sell it? What makes the brain buster special, or the DDT special, or a pile driver special, when you've been doing other moves that were even more physically impressive all fucking match? There was a match, WrestleMania 4, and this is when it all started, when things started to turn a little bit, around 1988, 1989, you started seeing less patience in the ring. And things started to, the pace started to quicken a little bit, but in 1988, they were still kind of sticking true to the old formula, and there was a match at WrestleMania 4. It was a first-round match of the World Championship Tournament between Rick Rude and Jake the Snake. And this was a Trump Plaza, Caesar's Palace, whatever the fuck you call it, crowd. So, you know, I don't know if it was a typical wrestling crowd. There was probably some people there who maybe weren't necessarily diehard wrestling fans or whatever, who were just kind of there for the spectacle or whatnot. I don't know. But the match had a 15-minute time limit, and these guys were going to go the distance. And most of the match was made up of rest holds. You know, Rick Rude would put Jake the Snake in a chin lock, or Jake the Snake would have Rick Rude in an arm bar or something like that. And it would go this way for a few minutes at a time. And, you know, you get people in the crowd chanting or yelling boring and stuff like that. You know, and you feel like, at first, you feel like, damn, they're losing them. They're losing the crowd. Now, take a stomach breaker, a gut buster, whatever you call it. Take that move. And does anyone even do it anymore? When's the last time you've seen a stomach breaker, a gut buster, or a reverse backbreaker? Dropping your opponent your opponent's stomach across the knee. When's the last time you've even seen that? No one does it anymore. No one even hardly does a backbreaker anymore. Because those moves, I guess, are considered boring. I don't know. I love those moves. But Jake the Snake executed a stomach breaker, a gut buster, on Rick Rude. And you should have heard the reaction of the crowd. They were like, whoa. Why did they do that? Why such a reaction for such a simple move? Because they had been taken on the ride. Like a roller coaster. Roller coasters gotta have ups and downs. It can't be straight across. Because if it's straight across, even if you're at, you know, 200 feet in the air, straight across, yeah, it's a little thrilling. But it's not as thrilling as plunging all 200 feet back down to earth and then shooting back up again. You got to have those peaks and valleys. It can't be just this nonstop action all the time because people are going to get numb to it. And I feel like that's what's happening these days. People are getting numb to this so-called action that they're seeing. And now all these big moves that these guys are killing themselves executing aren't even making an impact anymore. Like, the way I see it, if you're going to take a move, if you're going to execute a move, every move has a measure of risk, okay? Some, the risk is virtually non-existent, like an arm bar, okay? Very little risk to yourself executing an arm bar. But the more moves that you do, the higher up the scale you go, the more you increase the risk with the move. And a top rope move, you know, they used to call that high risk maneuver. You used to hear that term all the time. High risk maneuver. And a guy didn't even have to go to the top rope. He could go to the second rope. And they would call it a high risk maneuver. Why? Because number one, your opponent has been laying on the ground waiting while you took the time to climb the ropes. But when you leap off that rope, you're basically giving up any defense that you have, any possibility of defending yourself. That's why it's a high-risk move. Also, I mean, you could land awkwardly and injure yourself and fuck up your chances of ever even winning the match. So it's a high-risk maneuver. Anytime you go up that rope, you don't hear that term hardly at all anymore. Why? Because every move is fucking high-risk. And so it's just like when you tell everybody that every move is special, then nothing is special. You tell everybody everything's a finishing move, then nothing's a finishing move. Because if you're kicking out of everything, then nothing is, dangerous or needs to be feared as a dreaded maneuver, a feared hold, anything like that. You rob it of what makes it special in the first place when it's just this constant motion, this constant action. And I blame ECW, to take it back to where we started. Because when ECW was able to get over with that style, and it wasn't just I'm not just talking about the violence, okay? I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about the high spot matches. These so-called hybrid wrestlers. Those guys who incorporated more moves into their repertoire because in their minds, that's how you got over, was by pulling that shit. And granted, maybe it did because in contrast to what was going on, I mean, for the most part, it was different. It was unique at the time because up until that point, all you had seen was the old school way, you know, punching and kicking and the occasional big move here and there. When these guys started doing this hybrid shit, where it was Hurricane Ranas and moonsaults and shit like that constantly, top rope maneuvers and shit like that, all of a sudden, you know, when you do the contrast, it's like, whoa, that shit's awesome. That shit's exciting. You know, and I made this analogy, and I don't know if I want to, well, I guess I'll get into it a little bit. I made this analogy in my response to the question, what kind of wrestling do I like? I gave this example. Say you went to the grocery store, okay, because you woke up in the morning and fuck it, you didn't have any milk. And you know, we all know what's on the menu in the morning. Cereal, Lucky Charms, a little Frosted Flakes action, a little Tony the Tiger, pull up to the breakfast table, get your complete breakfast on, take on the day. You know what I'm talking about, a little Cocoa Pebbles. Not Fruity Pebbles, because fuck that shit. Anything that John Cena is associated with, we ain't having none of that. Who likes Fruity Pebbles anyway? It's Trix. It's Fruit Loops. You want some fruity cereal? That's the way to go. Everybody knows that. Except John Cena, apparently. Fucking douchebag. Anyway. So damn it, you don't have any milk, so you gotta go to the store. So you go to the store, and what are you going there for? You're going there for milk. You're going there for a gallon of milk. You're not going there for anything else. All you need is a gallon of milk, and you're good. You show up there, you're not disappointed that they only have gallons of milk, because that's all you want. That's all you need. So you go there, they got gallons of milk, you're getting ready to buy it, and the dairy manager comes up to you, and he's all, hey, man, we're having a sale today. You buy 1 gallon of milk, you get 2 for free. Now, you don't need 2 gallons. You don't need 3 gallons of milk. You're lucky if you get through 1 gallon of milk in a week. But fuck, are you going to turn down 2 extra gallons? I don't know, maybe give them away to your friends or something, but you're not going to turn that shit down. It's free milk. So you're like, well, all I need is 1, but fuck it, yeah, give me 3. So you take that shit to the register, you take it home, and you're good to go. That's exciting. You show up the following week, and I'll be damned if they ain't having the same special again. So you get your 3 gallons again. You haven't even gone through the first 3 gallons. But holy fuck, they're having the same special again. You can't turn that shit down. But what if they had that special every week? Every time you went back, 3 gallons for the price of 1. You can't say no, because, I mean, it's a great deal, right? But on the other hand, you're starting to realize, fuck, I don't need all this. You start actually longing for the good old days when you paid for 1 gallon of milk and that's all you got was 1 gallon of milk. Now you got to lug 3 gallons home every fucking time. Now you got to find something to do with it. It's almost becoming a nuisance. That's exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to wrestling. They opened up Pandora's box because that's what everybody thought that they wanted. All the action, all the moves. Yeah, no more of that boring headlock shit. This is awesome. This is what I want to see. And really, it's not. It's not. That's what you thought you wanted to see. Because who can turn down something like that? Who can turn down bell-to-bell action, right? But what you don't realize, and what mankind as a whole doesn't realize, is there is always such a thing as too much of a good thing. It's human nature, man. In everything, there's always too much of a good thing. That is a fact of life. And it applies to wrestling as much as it applies to anything else. And where we're at in professional wrestling is too much of a good thing. That's what you could call this generation. If they did a chronological history of professional wrestling, that's what you could title this chapter. Since the days of ECW till now, title it Well, let's say after ECW, when, yeah, the Monday Night Wars titled it too much of a good thing until today. Too much so-called action, too many moves, too much TV, too much wrestling, too many pay-per-views. It's too much. It's too much. You talk to wrestling fans, and sooner or later you're going to get the same thing. Man, it's too much. I just can't keep up with it all. I wish we could go back to the good old days. There's a reason why they call them the good old days, because they were good. What you got going on right now, it ain't good. There's no other way to put it. It ain't fucking good. But it wasn't meant to be this way. It shouldn't have been this way. I understand. I was right there with everybody. I was all about the Chris Jerichos and the Eddie Guerreros and the Dean Malenkos and the Rey Mysterios. Yeah, it was exciting. I was all about it too. But we didn't know what was good for us back then. We thought that's what we wanted. And now look at all these wrestlers killing themselves all over the country in gymnasiums and VFWs and independent promotions, trying to get over with moves. And no one's creating any memories. I saw this guy do this move, but fuck, those are the moves everybody's doing. Nothing about that's memorable. But you remember great storylines. You remember great characters. Those are the things that you recall fondly. You don't remember the moves. How much of your childhood is about moves? Those memories. Really, how much? And how much of it is about storylines and characters and great moments? That's what it's about. Entertaining. Connecting. It's drama. It's theater. That's what it's all about. In theater, there's a place for those action movies. You know, for the bang bang shoot 'em ups. Yeah, there's definitely a place for that. I enjoy a good car crash, just like the next guy. But there's also a place for one of those films that tugs at the heartstrings. For one of those films that challenges you as a human being. And wrestling is theater. And when that's not happening, because all we're concerned about is getting our moves in, you know? Our move set, A, B, and C. We're missing something. Wrestling is missing something. We've got too much of a good thing, and it's turning it into a bad thing. It's turning it into a nuisance. It's turning it into an obligation. How many times do you feel like you have to watch Raw? You don't want to watch Raw. You have to watch it because you don't want to be disconnected. You don't want to be out of the loop. But you're not looking forward to it. Remember how we used to look forward to it? Remember how Raw would end and you're like, oh, fuck, I can't wait for next week. 7 days until I can find out what happens next. Now it's like, ah, shit, I just sat through 3 hours of Raw. Now I got to watch the fucking main event on Wednesday. At fucking SmackDown on Friday, and holy shit, Impact on Thursday. There's an iPay-per-view on Saturday. Oh, I love wrestling and everything, but jeez. I'm burnt out, man. I'm burnt out just thinking about it right now. It's too much. Too much of a good thing. We got to scale it back a little bit. We got to make things special again. I'm just one voice. The voice of the voiceless. No, I don't know. Maybe some more people will hear this, and maybe some more people will jump on board. I don't know. But what I'm trying to do is educate the masses. That's what I'm trying to do. Trying to help them to realize that wrestling is better than what you're seeing today. It was better. It can be better. We just need to take a step back. And I hope it happens someday. I don't know if it ever will or not. But I, for one, would be all for it. But in the meantime, I'm going to point out things like Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston. I'm going to point out things like storylines like Brock Lesnar versus Big Show. Because pointing to those little tributes to days gone by and those little things that made wrestling so special in the first place, maybe the more attention gets devoted to those things and less attention gets devoted to these so-called good matches on Raw and SmackDown. And let me tell you, I don't buy that shit, folks. You tell me there was a great match between Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt on Raw or SmackDown, I don't buy it. I don't fucking buy it. I see the same fucking match every week. It's not good. I'm not going to sit here and call it good. You guys don't realize what you're saying. So I'm not going to focus on that, because that's just perpetuating the disease. And that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to point people towards the cure. The cure is more Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston. Not them, but that kind of match. More Brock Lesnar, Big Show. Not them, but that kind of storyline. That's the cure. And in the process, hopefully we'll the scales will fall off of people's eyes and they'll be able to recognize true, genuine, good wrestling when they see it. All right. I don't want to go too long tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and cut it there. I'm hoping that the Shining Wizards can hook me up with some plugs, maybe a section of plugs, either in the middle, in between the two segments, or maybe at the end. Suffice it to say, check out the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Check out all the shows. Folks, jump on board with the Midnight Jury. This is an awesome podcast. Jump on board with Turnbuckle Throwbacks. I can't wait for the big show. Well, the big show that they're going to do, the live Hulkamania show, 30 years of Hulkamania this Saturday. I'm going to be calling in, giving them guys hell, letting them know my opinion even more. Can't wait for it. It's going to be awesome. Check out all the shows on there, and check out Ring Wars. It's the best fucking wrestling page on Facebook. Facebook.com/Ring Wars. Big Ben Roberts over there in the UK. Hello. Doing things the right way. And come back and check me out again. This is Handsome Dan signing off. Check out my blog, handsomedanslastword.blogspot.com. I know it's wordy, but don't be a lazy fuck. You look up longer URLs when you're checking out porn. Handsomedanslastword.blogspot.com. I've got some good things to say, some good shit over there. Check it out. And check out my show. This is episode 2. Who knows how many more we'll do. But this is Handsome Dan's. This has been Handsome Dan Lopez for Handsome Dan's Final Say. I am out. Peace.